This is Tom Fox, and I'd like to welcome you to Innovation in Compliance. In this podcast series, I will bring you interviews with some of the leading experts who are changing the way practitioners approach compliance. Although the name compliance is in the title, it's really about innovation. And I wanted to drive the conversation about innovation in compliance into the 2030s and beyond, with a focus on innovations for the compliance practitioner and the compliance professional. You want to learn how to bring your business into an innovative state and more innovative business solutions for compliance problems, issues, and concerns. This is the podcast for you. Innovation in Compliance is a production of Compliance Podcast Network. In this episode, I visit with Matt DeLauro, who is the Chief Revenue Officer at Seon, who is the sponsor of this individual podcast. Matt and I talk about using a technology solution to combat fraud risk and anti-money laundering. I know you'll enjoy this episode. First, a message from the sponsor of the Compliance Podcast Network this month, Ethico.
In the intricate world of ethics and compliance, each second is precious, and slow case closures are more than just delays, they're missed opportunities. Enter Ethico. Our solution revolutionizes case management, cutting closure times in half and turning every challenge into a chance for improvement. Imagine a workspace where efficiency and compliance coexist harmoniously. Don't just dream of faster resolutions, make it your reality. Visit ethico.com/CPN today to book a demo and dive into our exclusive white paper by Tom Fox, The ROI of Compliance, and to try our free ROI calculator. Empower your team with the tools they deserve.
Hello, everyone. This is Tom Fox back for another episode, and I'm absolutely thrilled today to have Matt DeLauro. Matt, first of all, welcome, and thank you so much for taking the time to visit with me today.
Absolutely. What a pleasure to be here, Tom.
Matt, could you tell us a little bit about your professional background?
Sure. Yeah, I'm about 20 years experience on the vendor side, building software applications and implementing software applications for CFOs, chief risk officers, financials, financial controls. And so I've done everything from engineering to sales and customer service on the front end.
And has it been software in one particular industry, or have you been in a variety of different industries?
Quite a bit. I started out mostly in manufacturing and distribution, and then worked with a lot of tech companies and financial services and banks. And then maybe the last 5 or 10 years of my career has really been focused on financial services and fintech.
What's your current role, Matt?
So I'm the Chief Revenue Officer at Seon, which is a fraud prevention and anti-money laundering API first software company.
So who are Seon's typical clients, if that's an appropriate question?
Sure. Yeah. We operate in a couple of different industry verticals with varying types of alignment, but fraud is a problem almost every online business faces. So there are major outliers. We work with everybody from social and dating applications and their trust and safety teams to MLRO compliance officers at, you know, tier one banks, pretty much any fintech, digital bank or neobank, online lenders, buy now, pay later. We're really strong across customer onboarding and transaction monitoring related to compliance and fraud prevention in a broad set of industries.
Let me just go through, pick up on a couple of points you raised, because I think you said this, but it's not a one and done. It's not a put a software in place. Because you specifically mentioned customer due diligence, ongoing transaction monitoring, it's a process. And you can't say we've onboarded this customer through an appropriate due diligence. We can't say we're doing transaction monitoring. We can't say we're not really engaging in continuous improvement. Would that be a fair assessment?
Yeah, I think what we've found is that companies that have a static or maybe a long-standing permanent set of controls around fraud and compliance, they get figured out by the fraudsters and the money launderers very quickly. And so you start seeing things like they develop techniques to create mule accounts very easily. So they figure out how to get past your customer due diligence, and then they create the accounts that they need and then take advantage of them later. And what's really been interesting is in this sort of connected world, now there's lots of folks that are out there that are creating like fraud as a service, right? So the fraud community is just as connected as the compliance community, and it's a battle.
It's interesting that you phrase it that way, the fraud community. Could you explain that a little bit more? Because I've not heard that term before.
Yeah, what we find is that in various channels, both on the dark web, but also using modern applications like Telegram, money launderers, fraudsters, financial criminals are connecting with each other, oftentimes in mutually beneficial ways to each other to create attacks. So there may be fraudsters that are expert at getting stolen credit cards. And then there are fraudsters that are expert at identifying exploits in customer due diligence. And then we find them connecting with each other to create more sophisticated attacks or even selling their services as fraud as a service.
I've heard in the data protection area, something along the lines of the bad guys, the nefarious guys, the people on the dark web will essentially host Tupperware parties and people can come in and buy those services or even on an a la carte basis. Do you see something like that in the fraudster world as well?
Yeah, and it's really quite out in the open. So it doesn't take much time in a quick Google search or scrolling through some Telegram channels to find these types of fraudulent services, whether that's mule accounts at online banks or stolen credit cards or synthetic identities just for sale out in the open.
So I'd like to turn to some of the products and services that Cion offers around this. Could you maybe talk us through some of the key product offerings?
Yeah, first and foremost is fraud prevention, which is a key line of defense in any customer due diligence or KYC process. We've got an API that enriches a lot of metadata around who your understanding of your customer is, gathering things like device intelligence, IP information, social media profile, backgrounds, consortium data to prevent fraudsters from getting into the ecosystem that you might have as a financial services company, a fintech, a retailer even. And then we also provide compliance services around AML monitoring for politically exposed persons, sanctioned persons, providing case management to perform investigations and submit suspicious activity reports. So everything from fraud prevention on the front end through really the sort of hard kind of screening and monitoring that's a necessary regulatory requirement for anti-money laundering.
Matt, what about service offerings? Do you pair up a service offering with your products, or is it really all one product and service offering together for clients?
Yeah, we tend to bundle it. So we have like boutique onboarding capabilities. So we maintain a financial crime center of excellence at our company, and we offer onboarding services to train administrators and investigators and MLROs and fraud analysts. And then we also have a set of white glove services that are available because not every company that's out there has the ability to invest in the type of team that they need to perform every step in the monitoring or screening journey. So everything from the white glove will monitor your environment for you, all the way to train the trainer and really making sure that our customers are successful at, you talked about before, ensuring that they don't have a static posture related to financial crimes, that they continue to out-innovate the fraudsters using our tools.
Out-innovate the fraudsters. I'm going to steal that one. That's a great phrase. You had a phrase on your website I was not familiar with, and I wanted to ask you about it, and it's called device fingerprinting. Can you explain what that is and how that works into an overall anti-fraud program?
Sure, yeah. Most of our customers are doing some form of transaction online and principally with mobile, right? So whether you're completing an e-commerce checkout or you're signing up for an account with a digital bank, that device is probably the most important piece of intelligence that we have to be able to identify fraudsters, right? When we look at the most prevalent devices that are out there, which is Android and Apple devices, right? There are APIs that give us access to be able to collect information about the device. At that point in time, we can store a lot of this information, such as where is the device at, some behavioral biometrics around the device, such as how fast somebody might be typing on the device, what the orientation of the device is. And we have machine learning algorithms that can look for patterns, because oftentimes fraud is somebody either taking over somebody else's device, right? So there's a remote desktop protocol that's happening as somebody's walking somebody through a sophisticated phishing attack and trying to do an account takeover, or fraud bot attacks where people are identifying maybe an opening in the security posture of a company and they're trying to exploit it very quickly through maybe a small farm of devices. And they'll all have a similar pattern, whether it's a VPN is activated or they're spoofing HTML5. But by gathering all of this information off the device, we can correlate it to what we believe to be a fingerprint.
The services and products that you've described, which you bundle together, to me represent both a detection effort and a prevention effort. Obviously, prevention is better because if you prevent something, it hasn't happened and you don't have to respond. But do clients and your customer base understand really the power of prevention? Or is that something in your industry that is really seen as a best practice now?
They do, but historically, I think a lot of the technology that was available didn't provide for the type of prevention that wouldn't interrupt the customer experience. So the folks that we work with that are fighting the fraudsters and identifying the financial criminals, they have internal constituencies, right? They have to work with their revenue teams and their customer acquisition teams to ensure that they can do prevention, but without creating drop-off or lack of conversion in the customer experience. And so that's a very important consideration. And so one of the things that we did at Cion was build our application to be real-time from the ground up so that in a couple of hundred milliseconds, we can provide detection services in a way that wouldn't interrupt the standard customer experience.
Let me turn to AML or anti-money laundering, because that has become much more prevalent over the past couple of years. And really since the Russian invasion of the Ukraine, I think has been elevated in many persons' eyes to almost a national security issue, if not that. Are you having those types of conversations with your customer base because of the enhanced regulatory scrutiny around that issue?
Yeah, I think for a lot of people, specifically in North Americans as well, the concept of sanctions was something that was really esoteric. That was North Korea or Iran. And then recently, in really the last 7 years, the number of sort of sanctions and sanctioned individuals that had access to European banking systems and maybe had dual citizenship across different areas of the European Union has put it, you know, front of the fore, right? And so the more sanctioned individuals you have, the more people you have trying to layer and integrate and launder money. So yeah, it's really been like a big call to action, and the regulatory bodies are taking it way more seriously as these sanctions lists are growing.
My sense is that the financial industry, the banking industry, and the financial services industries have been aware of this and perhaps are ahead of the curve for U.S. public companies or other non-financial institutions. Would you say that's a fair assessment? And if so, are the non-financial institutions finally getting the message?
I think it's starting to get through. And I think as you start to see some digital companies that are innovating on traditional business cases and running into compliance issues and receiving fines from regulatory bodies, and it's making the news, that the word is getting out.
Are you, or rather Cion, able to move beyond simply manually monitoring and use either an AI or enhanced technology to look at large patterns of data for some of the anomalies that you've highlighted earlier in this podcast?
Yeah, we're a young company, right? We've been around for 5 years, and we built machine learning from the ground up as a core component of our application. And those algorithms and those sort of black box machine learning capabilities that our customers use today to deploy really advanced detection regimes are crucial. It's almost impossible to be a modern financial services company and not have some level of automation. And historically, what companies did is they had large outsourced teams, right? They would just throw people at the problem. And there's diminishing returns on that pretty significantly when you want to do business in 30 or 40 markets and language skills come into play and investigations that are done manually are just really costly and time inefficient.
So I'm a lawyer by professional training and background, and many of my brethren would understand what an anomaly or red flag is if you presented that to them. But they might not have the ability to understand something's outside the ordinary. Does the machine learning capabilities of Cion really help them to drill down to see something that should be set aside for manual investigation or at least greater scrutiny as opposed to something that might be less risky?
It really does. It's the last mile in detection, which is always the hardest to close and presents significant challenges. Yeah, we have a rules engine where we allow investigatory professionals to create rules about known anomalous patterns, but then there's the unknown. And a machine learning algorithm is only as good as you train it to be. Part of the journey that our customers have with Cion is labeling their data. As they identify fraud or potential money laundering attempts, they feed that back into our APIs in order to enhance the learning capability of the machine learning model. So it gets better the more data that you feed.
A little bit earlier, you gave us some of the details around device fingerprinting and how you and Cion and your machine learning capability have literally been able to build out from the different types of fraud. Is that the type of strategy or resource that you can make available to a wide variety of customers, or is it limited to each data set for each customer?
If you're doing business online today, it's being conducted through a browser, which is likely on a mobile device or a native application operating on a mobile device. And that's everybody that's doing business online is either there or getting there. We have very simple SDKs that allow the developers of these applications and these sort of e-commerce websites and transaction websites to really simply integrate the capability to track device and IP information.
Just a few years ago, it was, if not best practice, even innovative to be able to flag a suspicious transaction and provide an SAR. My sense is we move way past that. That'd be a fair assessment. And if that's correct, how should an SAR be used or viewed today?
Yeah, I think creating an SAR is a manual effort, right? Every step of the chain historically required significant manual effort, right? You might get a flag from a detection system or even a prevention system, but then typically it would go to somebody to perform an investigation and make the determination whether they needed to generate a suspicious activity report. And then you had to file it, right? And with the correct agency. And so when you look at the number of hours associated with it, as online businesses scale very quickly, we're looking at things like the ability to use large language models right now in our product to actually generate the SAR. So now somebody doesn't have to go into 15 or 20 different browser screens and copy and paste all the results of their investigation. We centralize all the data in one place and use a large language model to fill out most, if not all, of the suspicious activity report. So that's a pretty big innovation that's saving people in the investigation step 4 to 6 hours on average for each suspicious activity report.
In the U.S. public company world, unfortunately, many companies still silo their data. So a financial data may be siloed from marketing data or from HR data, or from compliance data or legal data. Is Cion able to really break through those data silos if you work with a company that's had those traditional silos to help give them a really holistic approach to these issues?
Yeah, it's really about the customer themselves, right? And so by developing this API-first strategy and providing simple SDKs that can be attached to your customer experience, we obfuscate the need to reach out to the IT team and get access to data from different silos, because we allow the compliance and fraud and risk teams to collect it themselves and position it all within Cion. So what we find is that most of our customers are doing investigations when they get a pop on a sanctions or a PEP list entirely within Cion, right? So they're not having to go out to 5 or 10 different applications or email another department or request access to a record.
So anti-corruption is a subset of fraud. Whereas in fraud, a fraudster will either steal money from the company or create a pot of money to steal from the company. In anti-corruption, the briber or corrupt employee creates a pot of money to pay a bribe to get a contract or to get some benefit. It sounds like the strategies that you and your team at Cion have been able to develop can really combine anti-fraud prevention, anti-corruption prevention, and AML or anti-money laundering. If I've understood this correctly, is that something that you can bring to the table for a customer, a comprehensive look at these three risk areas?
Yeah, internal controls are super important, not just with respect to things like FCPA and making sure that internal transactions, such as expenses, those policies that you have internally, but also there's a lot of fraud that's generated from employees, right? That are working directly with fraudsters. So it's really important within your policy to make sure that you understand that it's not just your business to customer transactions, but also sometimes it's your business to business transactions. It's your employee to business transactions, and monitoring all of those for anomalous behavior is going to set you up to be able to execute effectively on your compliance policies.
Let me pick up on two words you use there, anomalous behavior. And that to me really encapsulates so much of what a compliance officer does, an AML officer does, and an anti-fraud officer or fraud risk prevention officer does. Do you think that perspective is really understood, that it's really above Z and below A, that the transactions that are within your policies and procedures are less risky and you really need to at least start with the anomalous transactions?
I think you do, and it comes down to the definition of anomalous. So historically, the definition of anomalous might be like an oversized transaction. Right? That's a relatively unsophisticated approach to breaking through somebody's compliance barriers. Now we're talking about anomalous transactions in like complex romance and phishing schemes where you may have a customer for a very long period of time that is transacting successfully within your platform, but then all of a sudden they're logging in from a device that has screen mirroring associated with it, and they're making a brokerage or a securities transaction that is anomalous for them, but maybe not based on the size of it. But what's really anomalous is the way that they're accessing your application or the device that they're using to access your application or the IP address that the traffic is coming from.
Are you able to track such data points as it's Friday afternoon at 4 p.m., it's Wednesday afternoon at 4 p.m., and a transaction in the Middle East, which has as its weekend Thursday and Friday? Are you able to take it down to that level where the day and time can at least be considered?
Yeah, absolutely. The way our application functions is in a matter of a couple of hundred milliseconds. A lot of the payment service providers that we work with are actually doing a fraud or an AML check right before they actually even authorize the payment to go through. And then they're doing another, check after the payment has been posted. When you have the ability to get decisioning and access to machine learning algorithms that can identify things in a couple hundred milliseconds, there's really no excuse not to instrument it in front of all the traffic. And we have the ability to understand where the traffic's coming from, know what the home location record is, know where that user is, what IP address they're on. And it's all very possible and very out there.
I'm going to go so far as to say a few milliseconds is real time. Would that be an accurate reflection?
Yeah, generally, I think there's a lot of fuzziness in the industry about real time versus near real time. If you want to be able to say that you're doing real time, it has to be sub-second speed. You have to be able to not just collect the data and provide the data back, but also provide a decision in sub-second speed, and ideally less than half a second, so a couple hundred milliseconds.
If I electronically deposit a check, as I did this morning, and 6 hours later, I find that it's approved, that check has gone through some sort of process to determine validity, both from the check endorser and the check writer, all the way to my bank account. Would that be correct?
Yeah, almost every financial institution is doing optical character recognition on the check. They're converting those into strings, and they're pumping them through fraud prevention or AML screening processes.
Let me ask you to turn your head down the road to, dare I say, mid-century or 2030. It's a scary thought. But where do you see, I'm going to say that fraudsters have been with us since the beginning of time and will be with us till the end of time. Where do you see AML? Is it going to increase in importance? We have a, if not coming conflict, certainly competition with China. We have money laundering and sanctions elevated to national security status. So you just see more importance in this arena?
Yeah, I think at least what we're seeing in the near term is somewhat of a destabilization of the global order, right? And these international regulatory bodies, like the Financial Action Task Force that has 37 member nations, I'd hate to see that become less relevant than it is today. But when you look at potential major nation state conflict and de-dollarization, I think that probably is something that's really good for the fraudsters. Right, separate silos in financial ecosystems are probably where they're licking their chops over the next 10 years.
Matt, unfortunately, we are near the end of our time for this episode. But before we leave, I wanted to ask you if our listeners wanted more information on CION, any of the topics we've touched on, perhaps to reach out to you, what might be the best places for them to go or the best ways for them to do so?
Yeah, definitely pay us a visit at www.seon.io. That's S-E-O-N. And there's a link there where you can click on the link and put some information in and schedule some time to talk to an expert in fraud prevention or anti-money laundering.
Matt, I wanted to thank you again for taking the time to visit with me, and I hope we can continue this conversation.
Absolutely. Thanks so much, Tom.
This month, the Compliance Podcast Network is sponsored by Ethico. Are you struggling with budgeting and finance requests for your compliance program? Well, I've written a white paper together with Nick Gallo at Ethico, and we've made that available. So if you'll click through on the link, you can get a white paper on the ROI of compliance and how you can use that in the budgeting process. I know you will be able to use this white paper on ROI. Are you looking for a quick way to get some ideas for an upgrade for your compliance program? Well, I have a new podcast for you, the Compliance Tip of the Day, where in 5 minutes you can find out a cutting-edge tip of compliance that you can implement or at least consider for your compliance program. Check out the Compliance Tip of the Day each day, Monday through Friday, on the Compliance Podcast Network.